Paper 70. The Evolution of Human Government. No sooner had man partially solved the problem of making a living than he was confronted with the task of regulating human contacts. The development of industry demanded law, order, and social adjustment. Private property necessitated government. On an evolutionary world, antagonisms are natural. Peace is secured only by some sort of social regulative system. Social regulation is inseparable from social organization. Association implies some controlling authority. Government compels the coordination of the antagonisms of the tribes, clans, families, and individuals. Government is an unconscious development. It evolves by trial and error. It does have survival value, therefore it becomes traditional. Anarchy augmented misery. Therefore, government, comparative law and order, slowly emerged or is emerging. The coercive demands of the struggle for existence literally drove the human race along the progressive road to civilization. 1. The genesis of war. War is the natural state and heritage of evolving man. Peace is the social yardstick measuring civilization's advancement. Before the partial socialization of the advancing races, man was exceedingly individualistic, extremely suspicious, and unbelievably quarrelsome. Violence is the law of nature. Hostility, the automatic reaction of the children of nature. While war is but these same activities carried on collectively. And wherever and whenever the fabric of civilization becomes stressed by the complications of society's advancement, there is always an immediate and ruinous reversion to these early methods of violent adjustment of the irritations of human interassociations. War is an animalistic reaction to misunderstandings and irritations. Peace attends upon the civilized solution of all such problems and difficulties. The Sangic races, together with the later deteriorated Adamites and Nadites, were all belligerent. The Andenites were early taught the Golden Rule, and even today their Eskimo descendants live very much by that code. Custom is strong among them, and they are fairly free from violent antagonisms. Anden taught his children to settle disputes by each beating a tree with a stick, meanwhile cursing the tree. The one whose stick broke first was the victor. The later Andenites used to settle disputes by holding a public show at which the disputants made fun of and ridiculed each other while the audience decided the winner by its applause. But there could be no such phenomenon as war until society had evolved sufficiently far to actually experience periods of peace and to sanction warlike practices. The very concept of war implies some degree of organization. With the emergence of social groupings, individual irritations began to be submerged in the group feelings, and this promoted intra-tribal tranquility, but at the expense of inter-tribal peace. Peace was thus first enjoyed by the in-group or tribe, who always disliked and hated the out-group, foreigners. Early man regarded it a virtue to shed alien blood. But even this did not work at first. When the early chiefs would try to iron out misunderstandings, they often found it necessary, at least once a year, to permit the tribal stone fights. The clan would divide up into two groups and engage in an all-day battle. And this for no other reason than just the fun of it. They really enjoyed fighting. Warfare persists because man is human, evolved from an animal, and all animals are bellicose. Among the early causes of war were 1. Hunger, which led to food raids. Scarcity of land has always brought on war, and during these struggles the early peace tribes were practically exterminated. 2. Woman scarcity, an attempt to relieve a shortage of domestic help. Woman stealing has always caused war. 3. Vanity, the desire to exhibit tribal prowess. Superior groups would fight to impose their mode of life upon inferior peoples. 4. Slaves, need of recruits for the labor ranks. 5. Revenge was the motive for war when one tribe believed that a neighboring tribe had caused the death of a fellow tribesman. Mourning was continued until a head was brought home. The war for vengeance was in good standing right on down to comparatively modern times. 6. Recreation. War was looked upon as recreation by the young men of these early times. If no good and sufficient pretext for war arose when peace became oppressive, neighboring tribes were accustomed to go out in semi-friendly combat to engage in a foray as a holiday, to enjoy a sham battle. 7. Religion, the desire to make converts to the cult. The primitive religions all sanctioned war. Only in recent times has religion begun to frown upon war. The early priesthoods were, unfortunately, usually allied with the military power. One of the great peace moves of the ages has been the attempt to separate church and state. Always these olden tribes made war at the bidding of their gods, at the behest of their chiefs or medicine men. The Hebrews believed in such a god of battles, and the narrative of their raid on the Midianites is a typical recital of the atrocious cruelty of the ancient tribal wars. This assault, with its slaughter of all the males and the later killing of all male children and all women who were not virgins, would have done honor to the mores of a tribal chieftain of 200,000 years ago. And all this was executed in the name of the Lord God of Israel. This is a narrative of the evolution of society, the natural outworking of the problems of the races, man working out his own destiny on earth. Such atrocities are not instigated by deity, notwithstanding the tendency of man to place the responsibility on his gods. Military mercy has been slow in coming to mankind. Even when a woman, Deborah, ruled the Hebrews, the same wholesale cruelty persisted. Her general, in his victory over the Gentiles, caused all the host to fall upon the sword. There was not one left. Very early in the history of the race, poisoned weapons were used. All sorts of mutilations were practiced. Saul did not hesitate to require 100 Philistine foreskins as the dowry David should pay for his daughter Michal. Early wars were fought between tribes as a whole. But in later times, when two individuals in different tribes had a dispute, instead of both tribes fighting, the two disputants engaged in a duel. It also became a custom for two armies to stake all on the outcome of a contest between a representative chosen from each side, as in the instance of David and Goliath. The first refinement of war was the taking of prisoners. Next, women were exempted from hostilities. And then came the recognition of non-combatants. Military castes and standing armies soon developed to keep pace with the increasing complexity of combat. Such warriors were early prohibited from associating with women, and women long ago ceased to fight, though they have always fed and nursed the soldiers and urged them on to battle. The practice of declaring war represented great progress. Such declarations of intention to fight betokened the arrival of a sense of fairness, and this was followed by the gradual development of the rules of civilized warfare. Very early it became the custom not to fight near religious sites, and still later not to fight on certain holy days. Next came the general recognition of the right of asylum. Political fugitives received protection. Thus did warfare gradually evolve from the primitive manhunt to the somewhat more orderly system of the later-day civilized nations. But only slowly does the social attitude of amity displace that of enmity. 2. The social value of war. In past ages, a fierce war would institute social changes and facilitate the adoption of new ideas such as would not have occurred naturally in 10,000 years. The terrible price paid for these certain war advantages was that society was temporarily thrown back into savagery. Civilized reason had to abdicate. War is strong medicine, very costly and most dangerous. While often curative of certain social disorders, it sometimes kills the patient, destroys the society. The constant necessity for national defense creates many new and advanced social adjustments. Society today enjoys the benefit of a long list of useful innovations which were at first wholly military, and is even indebted to war for the dance, one of the early forms of which was a military drill. War has had a social value to past civilization because it, 1. Imposed discipline, enforced cooperation, 2. Put a premium on fortitude and courage, 3. Fostered and solidified nationalism, 4. Destroyed weak and unfit peoples, 5. dissolved the illusion of primitive equality and selectively stratified society. War has had a certain evolutionary and selective value, but like slavery, it must sometime be abandoned as civilization slowly advances. Olden wars promoted travel and cultural intercourse. These ends are now better served by modern methods of transport and communication. Olden wars strengthened nations, but modern struggles disrupt civilized culture. Ancient warfare resulted in the decimation of inferior peoples. The net result of modern conflict is the selective destruction of the best human stocks. Early wars promoted organization and efficiency, but these have now become the aims of modern industry. During past ages, war was a social ferment which pushed civilization forward. This result is now better attained by ambition and invention. Ancient warfare supported the concept of a god of battles, but modern man has been told that God is love. War has served many valuable purposes in the past. It has been an indispensable scaffolding in the building of civilization, but it is rapidly becoming culturally bankrupt, incapable of producing dividends of social gain in any way commensurate with the terrible losses attendant upon its invocation. At one time, physicians believed in bloodletting as a cure for many diseases, but they have since discovered better remedies for most of these disorders. And so must the international bloodletting of war certainly give place to the discovery of better methods for curing the ills of nations. The nations of Urantia have already entered upon the gigantic struggle between nationalistic militarism and industrialism, and in many ways this conflict is analogous to the age-long struggle between the herder-hunter and the farmer. But if industrialism is to triumph over militarism, it must avoid the dangers which beset it. The perils of budding industry on Urantia are 1. The strong drift toward materialism, spiritual blindness. 2. The worship of wealth power, value distortion. 3. The vices of luxury, cultural immaturity. 4. The increasing dangers of indolence, service insensitivity. 5. The growth of undesirable racial softness, biologic deterioration. 6. The threat of standardized industrial slavery, personality stagnation. Labor is ennobling, but drudgery is benumbing. Militarism is autocratic and cruel, savage. It promotes social organization among the conquerors, but disintegrates the vanquished. Industrialism is more civilized and should be so carried on as to promote initiative and to encourage individualism. Society should, in every way possible, foster originality. Do not make the mistake of glorifying war. Rather, discern what it has done for society so that you may the more accurately visualize what its substitutes must provide in order to continue the advancement of civilization. And if such adequate substitutes are not provided, then you may be sure that war will long continue. Man will never accept peace as a normal mode of living until he has been thoroughly and repeatedly convinced that peace is best for his material welfare, and until society has wisely provided peaceful substitutes for the gratification of that inherent tendency periodically to let loose a collective drive designed to liberate those ever-accumulating emotions and energies belonging to the self-preservation reactions of the human species. But even in passing, war should be honored as the school of experience which compelled a race of arrogant individualists to submit themselves to highly concentrated authority, a chief executive. Old-fashioned war did select the innately great men for leadership, but modern war no longer does this. To discover leaders, society must now turn to the conquests of peace, industry, science, and social achievement. 3. Early human associations. In the most primitive society, the horde is everything. Even children are its common property. The evolving family displaced the horde in child-rearing, while the emerging clans and tribes took its place as the social unit. Sex hunger and mother love established the family. But real government does not appear until super-family groups have begun to form. In the pre-family days of the horde, leadership was provided by informally chosen individuals. The African bushmen have never progressed beyond this primitive stage. They do not have chiefs in the horde. Families became united by blood ties in clans, aggregations of kinsmen, and these subsequently evolved into tribes, territorial communities. Warfare and external pressure forced the tribal organization upon the kinship clans, but it was commerce and trade that held these early and primitive groups together with some degree of internal peace. The peace of Urantia will be promoted far more by international trade organizations than by all the sentimental sophistry of visionary peace planning. Trade relations have been facilitated by development of language and by improved methods of communication, as well as by better transportation. The absence of a common language has always impeded the growth of peace groups, but money has become the universal language of modern trade. Modern society is largely held together by the industrial market. The gain motive is a mighty civilizer when augmented by the desire to serve. In the early ages, each tribe was surrounded by concentric circles of increasing fear and suspicion. Hence, it was once the custom to kill all strangers, later on, to enslave them. The old idea of friendship meant adoption into the clan, and clan membership was believed to survive death, one of the earliest concepts of eternal life. The ceremony of adoption consisted in drinking each other's blood. In some groups, saliva was exchanged in the place of blood drinking, this being the ancient origin of the practice of social kissing. And all ceremonies of association, whether marriage or adoption, were always terminated by feasting. In later times, blood diluted with red wine was used, and eventually wine alone was drunk to seal the adoption ceremony, which was signified in the touching of the wine cups and consummated by the swallowing of the beverage. The Hebrews employed a modified form of this adoption ceremony. Their Arab ancestors made use of the oath taken while the hand of the candidate rested upon the generative organ of the tribal native. The Hebrews treated adopted aliens kindly and fraternally. "The stranger that dwells with you shall be as one born among you, and you shall love him as yourself." Guest friendship was a relation of temporary hospitality. When visiting guests departed, a dish would be broken in half, one piece being given the departing friend so that it would serve as a suitable introduction for a third party who might arrive on a later visit. It was customary for guests to pay their way by telling tales of their travels and adventures. The storytellers of olden times became so popular that the mores eventually forbade their functioning during either the hunting or harvest seasons. The first treaties of peace were the blood bonds. The peace ambassadors of two warring tribes would meet, pay their respects, and then proceed to prick the skin until it bled, whereupon they would suck each other's blood and declare peace. The earliest peace missions consisted of delegations of men bringing their choice maidens for the sex gratification of their one-time enemies, the sex appetite being utilized in combating the war urge. The tribe so honored would pay a return visit with its offering of maidens, whereupon peace would be firmly established, and soon intermarriages between the families of the chiefs were sanctioned. 4. Clans and Tribes. The first peace group was the family, then the clan, the tribe, and later on the nation, which eventually became the modern territorial state. The fact that the present-day peace groups have long since expanded beyond blood ties to embrace nations is most encouraging, despite the fact that Urantia nations are still spending vast sums on war preparations. The clans were blood tie groups within the tribe, and they owed their existence to certain common interests, such as 1. Tracing origin back to a common ancestor, 2. Allegiance to a common religious totem, 3. Speaking the same dialect, 4. Sharing a common dwelling place, 5. Fearing the same enemies, 6. Having had a common military experience. The clan headmen were always